Playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Fred and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sports book.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
Well, here we are.
Felger.
What?
And Mass.
The whole team sucks.
Felger and Mass.
Maybe your part in the back is a little bit loose.
98.5. The Sports Hub.
Hour number three, Felger and Mass. Felger's off today. He'll be back tomorrow, I think. Jimmy, he's coming back tomorrow. Is that right, Jimmy Stewart?
Yeah, I believe that's true.
Okay, Felger's back tomorrow, so he'll weigh in on the Patriots, I'm sure, and other things have happenings over the weekend. In the interim, Jim Murray is alongside. Marshall Hook is here to give us headlines. 617-779-0985. We're going to get back to your calls here in just 1 second, but we began the day talking Patriots, and I think it's a good place to start and spend most of the day, really. We touch on the Red Sox. We'll do some more of that later, maybe even, and certainly in the baseball reporters. But with regard to Brady, and I asked this question earlier, Mike Reese of ESPN had an item over the weekend concerning Tom Brady. And Reese, as he often does, put together a collection of thoughts and notes, as he says, on the Patriots. And his first item concerned Brady over the weekend. And Reese concluded the item. It was only a paragraph, but he concluded the item with this sentence, which says, after staying away from voluntary workouts for what he termed family considerations, Brady is described as being as excited as ever for another season, according to those close to him. And so if you're one of these people that defended Brady's absence at OTAs, and again, this question really is for you because I did not defend Brady's absence. I don't think Brady's absence is going to have the negative effect on the field in terms of the rapport with his receivers than many people do. Felger feels that way. I don't. I felt like that's not a huge concern to me because Brady worked in some camps with guys and who never got it. Right, in OTAs and whatnot, and other guys pick it up quickly. So I don't think that that's going to be, to me, that's not a huge thing. Okay, to Felger it is, and even then huge is the wrong word. Felger thinks it'll show up on the margins.
Yeah, that's the term he uses. Could show up on the margins.
Right, which tells me even he doesn't really believe it, by the way. Like, you know, on the margins. Okay, well then even you don't think it's going to have a profound impact.
Well, when you have a take, sometimes you got to dig in, as we all know.
Well, no, I typically don't do that, Mark.
I just appreciate it somewhat close to a take.
Okay, so, but the thing with me is that I still look at it and say the problems that were there that inspired Brady to stay out of OTAs aren't going away just because now he's showing up a couple of days early. Like what, this means everything's fixed? Of course it's not fixed. But if you're one of these people that defended Brady.
That would be me.
Okay, does this now make everything go away? Everything's fine. Brady's here, so forget about it. It's over. All the bad stuff's gone.
No, if you mean the bad stuff like the Palace Q, that still exists. That's evident, and I don't even think that's even going to get fixed. I don't think you're going to have the come to Jesus meeting led by Robert Kraft that the three of them sit down and everything's copacetic, and all of a sudden Alex Guerrero's background. I don't think anything's going to happen. I think they're actually going to continue to ignore each other to another at worst 11-5 type of season. I don't think it's really going to matter all that much. But it's better that Brady's showing up early than late or not at all. Like, it's still a positive.
Oh, he was going to show up, though. Did you ever think there was a chance he wouldn't be there for camp?
If they traded Gronk.
Okay, well, so, but that didn't happen, right? I mean, to me, Brady was going to...
I think they came close.
Brady was... You might be right, Murray. Yeah, you might be right. To me, Brady was always going to be there. There are also some interesting items, little items, in the Bleacher Report story today on Jimmy Garoppolo that speaks to the relationship between Brady and Garoppolo and Belichick and all of that. We'll get to some of that, too. I want to
touch another one, too, before you go to the phones?
Actually, hold the thought, Murray, because I have one. You read some earlier. I want to read one myself here in a second. We'll get to that in 1 second. But Paul's in Rhode Island. Paul, go. Paul, you there?
I'm here, yeah.
Paul?
Hey, good afternoon. How are you? Love your show. I was just wondering if what your input is. What do you think that Brady leaned Garoppolo towards the California market, knowing get out of the AFC and the AFC playbooks and go challenge the records at San Francisco?
Okay, I don't know what the playbook and that has any to do with it. I like the first part of your question better, which is, did Brady urge Garoppolo to go to the West Coast as if that had anything to do with it? And I don't think Brady had any say other than he wanted Garoppolo out of Foxborough. Which brings me to this part of the story, Murray. And again, I'm going to the Bleacher Report story today on Jimmy Garoppolo. When a report surfaced that Tom Brady played a role in the exit of his own protege, Garoppolo felt grateful that he did not have to answer questions in public, hightailing straight out of Boston. Quote, parts of it were true. Parts of it I knew weren't true. Parts I didn't know if they were true or not, Garoppolo says now. I appreciated that Coach Belichick put me in the best situation. You hear those horror stories about guys finding out from Twitter. Okay? But he does say, I appreciated that Belichick put me in the best situation, meaning that he sent him to San Francisco and not to Cleveland. But the first part of that paragraph, when a report surfaced that Tom Brady played a role in the exit of his own protege, Garoppolo felt grateful that he didn't have to answer questions in public, hightailing it straight out of Boston. Quote, parts of it were true. Parts of it I knew weren't true. Parts I didn't know if they were true or not. So this is a tough question to answer. But do you think Garoppolo feels that Brady pushed him out of Foxborough?
Yes. I don't know how you can't feel that way. I don't think it was his, you know, like there was the thing that I immediately think of is the line from the Seth Wickersham piece from last year in ESPN saying that he had been locked out of the TB12 facility, which, I mean, that could be inadvertent. Maybe he showed up and it was, I don't think that he was purposely locked out. I think that was a little bit salacious. But I don't think Brady wanted him here. He didn't have to. He didn't want to have to worry about his job because Tom knows how he got his gig, and he knows how ruthless that Bill has been with personnel decisions. And more often than not, it's paid off. I don't think he wanted him here. He didn't want to have to worry about him because he knew he could lose his gig to him.
Okay, so again, that's what you believe. That's what I believe. That's what many of us believe. The question is, what does Garoppolo believe?
Well, I know that's a very vague answer, but to start it with, parts of it are true. Yeah, parts of it are true. We didn't really want him here.
Okay, so, and Murray, here's the part that I also find interesting. Garoppolo felt grateful that he didn't have to answer questions in public. Well, why was he afraid of answering questions in public?
Because he didn't want to have to lie.
Because exactly. Because he thinks that Brady pushed him out.
I mean, think about this. If somebody asks you whether or not something is true, like in parts of it are true, if the parts are the small, unimportant parts, then you just say, no, it's not true. If the parts of it are true, are the big important parts, that's when you say, well, you know, parts of it are true. You know, that's not all right. Exactly right, but, you know, parts of it are true. So of course it's true. Of course he thinks it's true. Of course he does.
I don't think there's any question that he does. I think that Garoppolo looks at it and says, yeah, he went to the owner and they said they were going to move me. He wanted me out of there, so they moved me, and thankfully I ended up in a good place. Belichick took care of me. So again, it feels like there's this kinship between Garoppolo and Belichick, which is not surprising. Murray, you read that. Did you read that part?
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a connection there between the two. And so Belichick wanted Garoppolo to be the next quarterback, and Brady sided with Kraft. So really, when you think about it, you had this Belichick and Garoppolo on one side, Brady and Kraft on the other, and Bill and Garoppolo lost, or at least Bill lost. So what Bill made sure of was that Garoppolo didn't lose badly, and he sent him to San Francisco instead of Cleveland.
Well, there's another line in this, too, from Kyle Shanahan, who, of course, is now his new head coach in San Francisco, that proves to how, you know, gaga that Belichick was for this kid, that he wanted to keep him. He says, I know New England wanted to keep him there and keep him on ice before Tom eventually retired. But what was exciting for me was that New England knew he wasn't going to resign there, Shanahan says. He wanted to start, and he wanted to play. He forced their hand. It would have been cool to play What's this go on here? Kind of got cut off. He didn't want to wait. That's the guy you want.
Yeah, and it should be noted, too, that neither Brady nor Belichick agreed to be interviewed for this story. So neither one of them wants to talk about Garoppolo anymore. Right? Not that that should surprise you. Quickly, Michael's under the bridge. Michael, what do you got?
I mean, I guess I'm just wondering what has happened to Murray here. Like, he's gone from being sort of the positive voice on the show to this, like, I don't even understand. I mean, Tiger Woods is more of a human being than Tom Brady. Tiger Woods actually hit rock bottom, had to work his way back up from the bottom. He's probably still, you know, dealing with the trials and tribulations. You see the guy, he's like a shell of himself. But yeah, Tom Brady is like, you know, he's really the guy who demonstrates authenticity more than anyone, Murray. But I just don't understand. I mean, you hate a guy who basically ended his career for the sake of the Celtics. You think Tom Brady is real and you love him, but you don't like Tiger Woods and
I never said Tom Brady was real. If anything, he's becoming a more unrelatable weirdo by the day off the field. I just love what he's done on the field is all. So that's why I defend him until I'm blue in the face. And Tiger, please. What a fraud. Oh, I'm a sex addict. That's the fakest thing you could actually say to get out of something. I'm a sex addict, please. Oh no, I'm suffering over here. Oh, what are you suffering from? Being a guy. Sex addict.
Yeah, Murray, when did
liar.
You
when, fraud.
Jimmy Stewart, when did Murray get so negative?
Day two.
Yeah. Yeah.
After his voice cracked day one, day two.
So, Jimmy, you know what we should do? Seriously, one of these days we should go back and pull some audio from Murray's first few days on the show just to see what he sounds like and juxtapose it or contrast it with some of Murray's stances now, because I think we've corrupted him. I think that's exactly.
I think he was corrupt. You just need to get comfortable with us.
I have firmly
that's
come
why
to the
when
belief.
I scouted him to bring him in here, like that was one of my main schemes, is because I saw this dark, evil side of him.
Yeah. Well, it's actually probably even changed and gotten worse within the last 2 weeks because I can't see when I'm in here.
There is no joy in Jim Murray. There's just none.
No, Murray's had some difficulty with the lighting in here. Yeah, so he may have to pull his Zoe soon and start wearing shades in here.
I've asked Murray, and the people at NBC seem to have ignored me.
That's part of the deal. Interesting. I think there's an interesting, I say pawn, in this whole power struggle at the top of the Patriots. We'll touch on him when we come back.
Felger and Mez. The Sports Hub. Felger and Mez.
I love it.
You were right, Mez.
I just keep loving it more and more.
Bore my listeners to death.
I finally feel alive.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
Sounds good.
Making sense of Boston sports.
There's no catching and no throwing. Anyone can play, no matter how hopelessly unathletic they are.
Felger and Mez, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
You know, we've always known that Jimmy Garoppolo has been in the crossfire in Foxborough. Was, not anymore. I think Josh McDaniels is in a similar spot. But before we get to that, there is I don't want to say news, but a little interesting piece of information out there concerning the Patriots. Marshall, what do you got?
Yeah, Tom Pelissero, who writes for the NFL Network, says, and I quote, this is in a tweet within just 23 minutes ago, the Patriots have been seeking a potential trade partner for wide receiver Malcolm Mitchell, per sources. Flash talent with 32 catches in 2016, but injuries have been frustrating. Maybe odd man out in New England, even with Julian Edelman's suspension. And Ian Rappaport retweeted that and added that they are very high on
Britt.
Kenny Britt. I've lost that tweet. But yes, that it makes sense because they're high on Kenny Britt at that position.
Murray, how do you feel about that?
I hate hearing this. You know, look, I've had my concerns about this kid ever getting on the field again because of this knee issue, but they simply want to move on because they have concerns about it. Like, he deserves to stay simply for his performance in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago against Atlanta. Like, this kid runs good routes. I think there's a trust thing there already, and it happened quick with him and Brady. I thought that this kid can play. I hate hearing that they want to move on for him for Kenny Britt.
I mean, to me, in that Super Bowl against Atlanta, he's the one that kind of got Brady going. Like, you know, he had a good game there. What do you have? I want to say 6 or 7 catches in that game?
Something like that, yeah.
I don't know if we could check that. But Malcolm Mitchell had a good Super Bowl. And I thought he was a key figure in that thing. And he hasn't played since. So here's my question. If you're looking to move Mitchell, to get what?
Right. So now that you put that out there, what the hell are you going to get for him? Probably nothing. So they're now going to cut him, and that's it. I'd rather them, even though, look, as I said, I'm concerned about whether or not he could see the field again, because it feels like that's a real injury. Never played all last year, even when it felt like it was getting close for him towards the end of the year. Obviously never happened. You hang on to him. See if you can work it out. Because if he's that damaged, no one's going to trade for him anyway. And this speaks to what my, I guess, the thing I'm most curious about heading into camp this week is who's going to be the wide receiver that can replace Julian Edelman in that first 4 weeks, and Danny Amendola as the gotta-have-it third and long guy that Tom Brady's going to look for. And looking at this roster, like, okay, I like Chris Hogan, but is he going to be that guy, especially, you know, going over the middle for a third and 11, third and 9? Probably not. Jordan Matthews was decent in Philadelphia, but down year last year and has a knee issue with when he was with Buffalo. Riley McCarron, this kid that is called the Wes Welker clone by Bill O'Brien when he was on the practice squad with the Houston Texans, maybe. But other than that, Kenny Britt, Cordarrelle Patterson, are they going to pick someone else off the street? Like, it doesn't – the wide receiver position right now feels like it's extremely thin, especially with Edelman out that first 4 weeks.
Sure, Brady will be really happy about that too, right? All this uncertainty at an important position for him. We'll get back to your calls here. And I want to touch on Josh McDaniels here, but we'll do that in a second. Fred's in Rhode Island. Fred, what do you got?
I just wanted to hit on the Brady. We all lost on that. Like as far as the feud is concerned,
lost,
you know what I'm saying?
Lost on what, Fred? What are you talking about? Which part?
All of us lost on us winning forwardly. Because losing...
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to let you go, Fred, because I honestly, I don't think you were ready to go, and you were all over the map. I don't know what the hell
forwardly.
You're talking
about. We're moving forwardly.
Kevin's in Brockton. Kevin, what do you got?
Hey, listen, guys. Thanks for taking the call. Hey, the bottom line is, I don't know if you know what everybody's looking at out here, but if Brady goes down, we're all done. I mean, I don't know what's going through Belichick's mind. I mean, we need a quality backup, and to follow it up, what do you think about the chance of them giving Johnny Manziel a shot?
He just got traded in the Canadian League. But Kevin, minus the Garoppolo years, particularly at the end, how is that different than any other year Brady was here?
Well, you're looking at a guy that's 40 years old right now. I mean, the chances, you know, history says, you know, I remember an interview with Dan Marino going back a few years, and he says it's just going to happen one day, you know, and you know, without any warning. And if that's the case, I mean, you know, we're going to be in serious jeopardy of having a decent team out there on the field.
Yeah, so look, I'm not worried about the backup situation. I mean, to me, I'm worried more about it in the long term than I am in the short. I don't know how you guys feel, but I look at that and say, Brian Hoyer? Like, honestly, at this stage...
Oh, they're doomed with him. I know Mike thinks they could still go 11-5, 10-6. Please. He's awful.
So, look, I'm not sure with Hoyer that they can do that either, Murray. I mean, but to me, the question about quarterback is long term, not short term.
Well, and tell me any... starting or any backup quarterback, does it really matter? If you lose Tom Brady, you've lost Tom Brady and you've lost the season. All due respect to, you know, whatever the 11-2 season was back when. That doesn't add up to 16, I know. But, you know, of course, it doesn't matter. Johnny Manziel, Brian Hoyer, me, it doesn't matter. If it's not Tom Brady, it doesn't matter.
I mean, forget Manziel. He can't play in the Canadian League, it doesn't feel like, for crying out loud. So at one point I said roll the dice on a guy like him, but I wanted them to sign Manziel and draft somebody, not someone in the seventh round like, what's his name, Danny Etling?
Yes, kid from LSU? Yeah, Danny Etling is the name. At least you got it.
Yeah, I got it right that time. I almost called him Eddie. Eddie again. But I did mention McDaniels, and this part of the story I do find interesting. Because there was this perception that when McDaniels stayed, remember the photos of Kraft and Belichick having dinner that night at Patriot Place?
Mm-hmm.
And the whole idea was that the two of them were responsible in retaining McDaniels. And I don't think Belichick had anything to do with it. And Greg Bedard has reported that Kraft intervened to keep McDaniels, probably as a way to ensure that the Patriots would have a coach if and when Belichick walked out the door. So I'm not going to get caught with my pants down, Robert says. So I'm going to make sure Josh is still here. And then if Bill does something and wants to leave or whatever, I'm still good. And Tom's happy because Tom wants McDaniels. So Karen Garrigan in the Herald wrote over the weekend that as for Belichick, he is reportedly irritated because he believes Brady tugged on Robert Kraft to make moves, parentheses, Garoppolo and McDaniels, which ultimately forced Belichick's hand, Garigian wrote. My sources confirm Brady had a hand in bringing McDaniels back at the 11th hour after the latter was headed to Indianapolis to be the Colts coach. And I just wonder how McDaniels feels about all this. Because on the one hand, he works for Bill. So he looks at it and says, so Bill doesn't really want me here? I'm only here because Brady and the owner wanted me here? And maybe he knows all of that ahead of time because he says, well, when Bill goes, I'm going to be the coach. Like, maybe that's the whole logic.
He knows what the dynamic is. I don't think he's in the dark about that.
But it really does create this whole sort of, it's not just Brady versus Bill. Like, McDaniels is on Brady's side.
Whether he likes it or not.
Correct. And that's a better way to put it, Murray. That he is going to, you know, because Brady wanted McDaniels, the perception from Bill is, well, Brady wants Josh. So there's the buffer that Greg Bedard has talked about. Like, I really do. I believe that this stuff is all going to, it will rear its ugly head if and when the Patriots have some sort of adversity during the season. So the first time that something goes wrong, what's Brady going to be muttering under his breath about Bill? And does that stuff then translate on the field and the team can't handle adversity? Because if you want to go back, that's what happened in 09, right? I mean, the team could not handle adversity. 4th and 2 happened in Indianapolis. Then a couple of weeks later, they played in New Orleans and got their doors blown off. And in that documentary, A Football Life, we have that image of Bill standing on the sideline saying, I can't get this team to respond the way I want it to, or I can't get this team to play the way I want it to. And to me, that's a team that can't handle adversity. It's not, you know, there's no bond there. The team's not united, and they can't handle it. And I wonder, with these cracks now, to me, the real fallout of the whole Brady Belichick Kraft Garoppolo saga is that crack that's underneath the surface, that thing will grow if and when there is stress on it. And that's what I worry about with this Patriots team. But aside from that, Murray mentioned an actual football thing there, the wide receiving core. So we're going to throw that question out there too. Entering this camp from a football standpoint, take the gossip out of it. What are the issues that concern you about the Patriots entering 2018? We'll do that after Marshall gets you caught up on headlines.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub. Every afternoon, Felger and Mass bring you the science of sports.
Stupid me.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Well, obviously, there's a voluntary part of our year. We don't have any control over that part of it. And as coaches, selfishly, we always want them all here because that's, you know, that's where we have the most fun and you enjoy working with them all. But I totally understand those things happen. It's happened here before. And I have no doubt that, you know, he's doing what he thinks is right for him and his family. And I completely respect that. I know he'll be ready to go. I know he'll be in good shape and good condition. I'm sure he's working really hard.
And that's Josh McDaniels back during OTAs talking about the absence of Tom Brady. So now Brady shows up early and everyone does cartwheels. Yay! See, it's over. It's over. No problems. Brady's in and everything's fine. No issues at all. So I'll tell you what, we'll put the gossip aside just for a second. And I'll ask you, Murray, I know you touched on this briefly in the last segment, but from an actual football standpoint, okay, let's assume in some fantasy land, in someone's little, you know, fantasy land head, that everything's fine on the good ship Lollipop as usual, and the Patriots will just, you know, march forward like they always do, block out all the distractions. If there are no cracks or fractures in any of the foundational relationships down there in Foxborough, from a football standpoint, you look at this team, what concerns you?
Who the hell the left tackle is? Week one, is it going to be Trent Brown, who they traded for, who was out of shape in San Francisco, so they couldn't get rid of him fast enough? Is it this kid that they drafted from UGA, Wynn, who's supposed to be a guard, but maybe has the size and ability to be the left tackle? Who is going to be protecting Tom Brady's blind side? And then wide receiver, who is going to be the gotta have it, third and long guy that's going to be able to replace Julian Edelman in that first 4 weeks, and Danny Amendola overall. Again, they've been showing this AFC Championship game, which at this point we're now 6-7 months away from. And if you forgot, he makes every big play, Danny Amendola. And he's done that the last couple of postseasons. They're going to desperately miss that guy. So who is going to be that wide receiver on that depth chart right now? Because frankly, I don't see it. Maybe someone pops that you don't, you know, that's new, like Jordan Matthews, maybe this Braxton Berrios kid who they drafted in the 7th round or 6th round, whatever it is. But I think that's a big ask this early. I just don't see who that guy is going to be. Maybe someone pops. Maybe they end up bringing in an Eric Decker or someone like that off the street. So I have some concerns at that position. And then on the defensive side of the ball.
Okay, so just stop there for 1 second. You start offense, though.
I do, yeah.
I mean, like, don't can you imagine, has there been another time short of like 06? Right, where you looked at the offensive side of the ball with Tom Brady, a quarterback, coming off an MVP season and had concerns about the offense?
I mean, knowing me, I'm sure that there was one in there. But yeah, I mean, 06 was the main one. I mean, it felt like they left him kind of high and dry when he's playing with the likes of, you know, Doug Gabriel and Rashay Caldwell. But I have some legit concerns there, especially specifically at that position, wide receiver.
So, and the reason I stopped you there, Murray, is because for me, it's the defense. So, and look, they have a million questions on offense. They do, and left tackle worries me too. I don't know what they're going to do there, but I do know that because of Brady and because of Gronk, that they'll figure it out. They'll figure, and Edelman, in theory, will be back at week 5, although I don't know what kind of player he'll be. And I don't mean from an injury standpoint. I mean, now that he's been popped, who the hell knows if he's going to be able to do what he did before. But I think there's enough there between Gronk, Brady, Hogan, Edelman. You know, they signed Sony Michel over the weekend. So and they have plenty of bodies at running back, and someone in the receiving core will pan out better than we expect. And I think ultimately they're going to be okay there. But the other side, boy, it blows me away how fast people forget that they get absolutely freaking torched.
Oh, no, I haven't forgot that either. I was just getting started on the defense, but go ahead.
In the Super Bowl by Nick freaking Foles. Like, so to me, and I know they've made some changes on the defensive line, Danny Shelton, Adrian Claiborne, but I still look at the secondary and say, who's the other corner going to
be? Well, so that was what I was going to say. Yeah, who's cornerback two? Is it going to be Jason McCourty? Is it going to be Jonathan Jones, who, when healthy, looks okay, but still, I feel like that's thin there. And apparently they brought in, you know, I lost the tweet, but they signed some safety that was formerly with the Houston Texans that you probably hadn't heard of, but he was an undrafted free agent in 2012. So just to round out the 90-man roster. But
and I still don't believe in the linebacking core, Jim.
No, me either. Nor as soon as Dante Hightower goes out for a game, which is a given because he never plays a full season, it's still the likes of, you know, Kyle Van Noy and the rest, Landon Roberts and everybody else back there. That's mostly sucks.
And so, again, you know, maybe Dietrich Wise and Derek Rivers and those guys will pan out, and, you know, defensive end slash linebackers, hybrids, that maybe we'll get a better idea there as to what kind of talent they have. But to me, I still look at the defense. I think whenever the Patriots get undermined, it's almost always on the defensive side of the ball. Almost always. Max is in Beverly. Max, what do you got?
Hey, so I got three big reasons why trading Malcolm Mitchell would be the worst idea ever. The first reason is because we'd get no value for him.
Right.
The second reason is because the first four games of the season, you don't have Julian Edelman. So the only two wide receivers that would have even somewhat of a rapport with Tom Brady are Chris Hogan and Philip Dorsett. And then the third reason is because even though Edelman comes back after four games, right, then you're putting more pressure on a plus 30-year-old receiver who just came off an ACL injury. I just don't get the point.
Well, so look, Max, and for those that haven't heard, there was a tweet out there that the Patriots are...
I have it right here. It's
go ahead, read it again, Murray.
Yeah, Tom Pelissero of NFL Network. The Patriots have been seeking a potential trade partner for wide receiver Malcolm Mitchell, per sources. Flash talent with 32 catches in 2016. But injuries have been frustrating. Maybe odd man out in New England, even with Julian Edelman's suspension. So injuries have been frustrating. I have to say that the source said that to him. Deal with it. Deal with it. This kid has talent. He had a rapport. It was evident with Tom Brady, especially. Look at Super Bowl 51. They had something going there. You're going to give up on him just because you're frustrated by the injuries? I am, too, as a fan. It killed me that this kid never saw the field last year. I have some concerns about that going into this season. But you don't just cut bait like that. And even, what the hell's a return going to be?
See, I always smell a rat in stories like this because of what you just said, Murray. If a guy's damaged goods and he can't get on the field, who the hell's going to trade for him? especially in that league. Good players get cut and released for crying out loud, and then they end up just signing lesser deals with other teams. So part of me wonders, I don't know, maybe this is, if there's an ulterior motive here.
The Goosem?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe they need him now, right? They need him. I mean, they don't have the kind of experience at wide receiver they've had in the past, especially with Edelman gone for the first four games. Amendola's gone. They could use a guy on the outside. Like, oh, you add all that in, maybe they're saying to Malcolm Mitchell, hey, look, you got to stay on the field, pal. You got to stay out there. Now, I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too much into it. Maybe it is as simple as the guy can't get on the field and they're going to move him. End of story. But I don't know. It doesn't feel like you'd get anywhere close to value there. What are you going to get, a seventh-round pick?
Even still.
For a guy that didn't play last year?
If you're another GM out there laying in the weeds, you know, for this player, if you like his potential, you just say, well, they think he's damaged goods, so they're going to have to cut him anyway because they have 11 wide receivers on that depth chart. I think it's something like that, 10 or 11 right now, so they're going to have to cut him. We'll just wait it out. You're not going to make a deal for him now.
No, exactly right. Which to me, maybe this is just a way before camp to give this kid a kick in the ass. At least that's what I hope it is, because I can't see any logic really for letting him go now. Makes no sense. When we come back, I promise your phone calls.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Boys and girls, I'm here today to present an exciting opportunity for togetherness.
Felger and Mass.
That's awesome.
Of course it is.
That's great.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Okay, as promised, we're going to get right to your phone calls here. Training camp starts this week. Patriots will kick it off on Thursday. Zolak and Bertrand will be down there that day. You can listen to them right here. 10 to 2, they'll have all your camp coverage right here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Paul's in Methuen. Paul, what do you got?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
I hate to move away from the football to the gossip, but I just want to talk a little bit. I have a friend who's still in denial. I was born in 1997. So we've only really seen the Patriots have success. I have friends saying there's no real evidence that there's tension between the Brady and the Kraft camp and the Belichick camp. Kind of wanted to see if you guys could rehash what happened from the beginning, first rumors, all the way up until now.
Okay, so, Murray,
talk about a big ask.
Okay, yeah, well, that's right. I mean, we couldn't possibly...
Settle in for the next 90 minutes we take you through the days of the Patriots' lives.
Yeah, so look, Beadle and Zoe did this today. They kind of went through the timeline of everything that has happened, and it would take a long time to do. But
let me give it to you in two easy steps. Alex Guerrero was kicked out of the stadium, and then now we're here.
Okay, and Jimmy Garoppolo was traded. So, but look, there's a long list of things, but to me, the part that does interest me is the idea that this is all fiction. It's not real, which brings me to David in New Hampshire. David, go ahead.
Yes. Hi, guys. Your take that Brady won versus Belichick and Garoppolo out, it's good for talk radio, but I really think it is fiction. I have two quick points to tell you why, but because I know Tony Stein should cut people off if they don't agree. Here's my question.
No, I'll let you go. Go ahead.
Okay, well, here's my question first. If Brady loved having Garoppolo around, if he was his Edelman, if he loved mentoring, if they got along, if he thought it was great, what would have been different after I make my points? How would the actual what had happened been any different? If he'd gone to lobby Bob Kraft and said, keep Garoppolo, how would it come out different? Here are my two points. Wickersham, who you guys like, reported that the Pats repeatedly offered Garoppolo a four-year contract in the $17 to $18 million range. He said that Garoppolo and Don Yee rejected it out of hand. Tom Curran confirmed this. It was clear, he said, Garoppolo wasn't staying even for 1 year as a backup. Belichick kept him as long as he could till the trading deadline when he couldn't get the deal done. So Brady, if he had veto power, go to Kraft then. Say, I don't want this backup making $4 million more than me a year for 4 years. He didn't. It was Garoppolo who chose not to. Now, Tony, one other point. You kept talking about franchising. I think you were the only one who thought about franchising a backup quarterback for $10 million more than the starter.
Yeah, hold on, David. I was not the only one, but go ahead. I think Mike Reese even thought it was an option, but go ahead.
Okay. But Garoppolo didn't want to be a backup for any money. You would have had a backup, a disgruntled backup, and think of any owner in the league who would have paid the backup to the MVP of the Super Bowl and the MVP of the league $10 million more than his starter to have a backup quarterback. But even if that
okay,
was true,
David, listen, you made, no, listen, you made your point. You made your point, but I want to ask you a question just quickly. Do you think Bill Belichick wanted to keep Jimmy Garoppolo?
Yes, he tried to sign him as a backup.
Okay, so, yeah, he didn't want him as a backup. He wanted him as a starter. He wanted him as a starter, which brings me back to this story in the Bleacher Report today about Garoppolo by Jun Lee. Okay, and again, a lot of it really just confirms stuff that we believe, and that's if you believe the story. But your point is that this whole Palace Q thing is fiction. That's what your point was. So that there's no tension, you know, no tension between Brady and Belichick. Let's pretend that Brady actually wanted to lobby for Belichick, but I don't want to pretend. I want to live in reality. Brady did not want Garoppolo here. He didn't like the threat of Garoppolo beyond this season. And in this story, again, it says today, Garoppolo was planning a post-Super Bowl trip with the guys. He was planning to soak in more as Brady's backup, but deep down, he felt he was better than the greatest of all time, that he could one day beat out Brady for the starting job in New England. Hell, he'd even planned on moving to a new place at the Seaport District in Boston for the 2018-19 season, which is this season coming up. So Garoppolo believed he could beat out Brady and that he was planning to move to the Seaport District. And you know what? Fine. So that's what Garoppolo believed. You know what I'm here to tell you? That I think Belichick believed Garoppolo was going to beat out Brady for the starting job. And so Brady wanted to move forward with Garoppolo, or rather Belichick wanted to move forward with Garoppolo. Kraft and Brady intervened. Like, how can you say there's no tension down there? Like, it blows me away. So do people think we're just making this up? Greg Bedard's making it up. I think Mike Weitz, Karen Garigian, people,
Tom Curran,
they all acknowledge that there's tension down there.
We're just looking for clicks and looking for things to talk about. This is what I hear from people, that this is all just us making something out of nothing so we have something to talk slash write about.
Why did Tom Brady say at the Milken Institute when he was being asked by Jim Gray if he felt, paraphrasing it, but if he felt respected by Belichick and the organization, and he said, "I plead the fifth."
You're just reading into that.
Oh, right. Yeah.
You're no, just reading I'm into just, that, Jim Murray. You're making it something more than it is.
Hashtag fake news. I'm putting my spin on it. That's right.
There have been so many opportunities for Brady in particular, because I think this whole thing spins off of Brady. There have been so many opportunities for Brady to just sit there or stand there and say, "Guys, listen, I know you've all been throwing kinds of crazy crap out there. None of it's true. We're good. Bill and I are good." And so I was sorry to see Jimmy go. He's had a million chances to do that. A million. And instead, when Malcolm Butler went on Instagram after the Super Bowl, Brady went on there and liked the comment. He left his coach out there dangling. He wanted McDaniels back to be a buffer. All of this. And he didn't show up at the optional workouts. So again, if you don't want to believe that there's tension down there and that there are problems or fractures down there, fine, don't believe it. But don't mock the rest of us if we do, because there's plenty of evidence to suggest that the stuff is real. Now, will it affect their season? I don't know. Maybe not. There's never been a better group at blocking out distractions and dealing with them than the Patriots. They are great at it. And at the end of the day, Bill Belichick is as cold as it gets. And that's a good thing in this case, because he can show up and work with people that he can't stand. And maybe he doesn't like the quarterback anymore. Or maybe he doesn't like what the quarterback's become. And I think Brady's the same way, despite the fact that he didn't show up at the optional workouts. So again, if you want to believe that it's the good ship lollipop down there, you're entitled to. You believe whatever you want. As long as they win games at the end of the day, you're happy. But don't mock the rest of us for believing the people who cover the team on a regular basis when they're telling us that there are foundational and structural problems in the relationships down there. Okay, it's not just a talk radio topic. It's real. They're human beings. They get sick of each other. It happens.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mazz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.